Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic.
It is my pleasure to welcome back Susan LaBelle. Welcome back, Susan.
Thanks, James. Thank you for inviting me.
So for those of you that have missed out on the previous episodes with Susan, I highly encourage you to go back to those. We talked about root cause analysis made simple and asset criticality, and we'll make sure to provide those links in the show notes for you to get back and listen to those great things from Susan. But in order to make sure everyone's familiar with Susan, you know, she is the author of Root Cause Analysis Made Simple, Driving Bottom Line Improvements by Preventing One Failure at a Time. Susan specializes in operational excellence, or OPEX, with a strong focus on asset management and reliability strategy, cost-effective lean maintenance programs, and continuous improvement. She brings over 20 years of practical experience to drive asset management, operations, and maintenance improvement opportunities. Susan currently serves as National President for the Plant Engineering and Maintenance Association of Canada and teaches the Maintenance Management Professional Certification Program. Did I cover it all there, Susan?
I think you've got it all.
Perfect. So, you know, you spent over 20 years in asset management, maintenance, and reliability. And I'm sure over that time, there's been a lot of different things you've seen. But I think one of the things that you've probably seen that is consistent over those years is, what is the value of maintenance? What is the value of an asset management program? Has that question changed since you first started to now?
I think the value really hasn't changed, but people's understanding of the value has been changing and maturing. So I think one of the biggest things that we see is related to that maturity of the organization and the view of the maintenance department. That is, whether it's seen as a cost of doing business, so doing maintenance, or as a valuable contributor to the production facility's capacity to deliver its product, whether this product's clean drinking water, electricity, oil and gas, or manufactured goods. I think this view of maintenance is really evident when we look at how maintenance program budgets get developed. And I think that the view of how maintenance contributes to the organization and its value is shifting over time.
Yeah, absolutely. People are beginning to realize that if we maintain stuff properly, we invest a little bit upfront in that program, we start to see 2 times, 3 times, 5 times the return on that upfront investment in doing this stuff properly through improved productivity, improved safety, improved, you know, customer service, all those various things.
Absolutely.
With that, though, maintenance exists, though, to support an operation in creating value by keeping those assets performing, like we just discussed. But what is missing from the funding of maintenance improvement programs? Why do we have such a difficult time in justifying some of this funding requirements to drive these improvements?
I think one of them, as I said, is the view of maintenance is changing. And it's not uncommon to see maintenance program budgets that are created as last year's budget plus a small percentage for inflation. And we see more companies moving to zero-based budgets. But now what we're really seeing as companies mature and organizations mature, some are looking at these comprehensive asset strategies to form the basis for their maintenance program. And particularly for their maintenance improvement programs.
So we're seeing that change. We're seeing a change in the way the budget's done. We're wanting to see the, you know, the justification of it, not last year plus a bit for inflation or last year minus 10%, whatever that case is. So there's a shift in how we want to fund these things, correct?
Exactly. And I think we need to understand that there will always be a base level maintenance budget for the activities that simply need to get done. But we also need to consider, are we just happy with the status quo? Or are we really starting to look at maintenance improvement programs? And how do we go about building a business case for maintenance improvement?
So that's interesting. You have your basic maintenance budget, but then we also have to think about the maintenance improvement aspect. So what is that business case for maintenance improvement?
Part of this is the business case for the improvement. It's really foundational on how maintenance contributes to the overall goals of the organization. If we think of asset management as a whole as coordinating the operational activities of the organization to drive value, profitability, and meeting the organizational goals, asset management is that bridge from financial to operational, and our maintenance improvement really helps us achieve that particular value and profitability.
So it's about driving that improvement, creating that profitability, doing all those wonderful things that we need to do. Now, being a maintenance guy, start on the ground floor. When I hear business case, I get a little nervous. So why do we actually need to build that business case? It seems like a lot of work, a lot of fancy numbers from finance that maybe we don't understand.
It's a really good question. And I think the business case for maintenance improvement is really a key factor. Organizations must decide where they're going to spend their scarce resources, whether this is dollars or people's time. And they need to decide where to put them between competing project objectives. And every organization experiences constraints. So the business case really provides the rationale for the decision making. The exercise in developing a maintenance budget is fairly well understood, but we're really going to have to think about improving on the current practices and actually thinking of some of our maintenance improvement initiatives as separate projects.
So when we build this business case for maintenance improvement, we build the business case to fund the development and launch of that improvement initiative. And then once we get that in place, then that becomes part of the regular maintenance budgeting process.
Yes, it fits itself very nicely into the standard maintenance budget. So we need to make sure that our maintenance improvement, whether this is to decrease our downside risk, so repeat failures, those sorts of things, or take advantage of opportunities, it is an aspect of our overall maintenance budget, but it may or may not be funded through a different pool of dollars. I think it's important to understand what, as you brought up, it looks overwhelming, but what data do we really require to build that business case? So very similar to other projects, we need to know what is the technical scope, what's the cost, and what's the schedule to execute our maintenance improvement project, and some sort of estimation of the expected benefits to put into this business case. This really means that we need our data on how much we currently spend on maintenance or the specific maintenance activity that we're looking at, what the associated production volume is, and where appropriate, how often we experienced failures in our ability to achieve that desired production capacity.
Okay, so we need to have all that information. We need to have the scope, the resources required, what's the impact on the business. Do we need to get finance involved with this to help come up with some of those numbers or help build this business case?
I think that one of the key things we need to think about is who else in your organization. It does look daunting if you're at the front line. It's not as challenging as you might think. Whether you're in a large organization with multiple departments or a very small organization of 10 or 15 people, it's important to touch base with your finance and accounting folks, your supply management, your operations, your management team, some of these other individuals, or even your the key vendors for support as you build the business case. You will be quite amazed at how quickly it can be pulled together once you know the scope that you're trying to accomplish. So don't overlook those resources internally. Many of the teams, say finance, accounting, or management reporting, even if it's just one person, is already tracking many of the metrics that you will be demonstrating progress against. So it helps to get them engaged up front.
Okay, so we understand the scope. We get the right stakeholders, if you will, involved with this. Start getting the right data. So how do we actually build this business case?
Usually when I do this, and I've done hundreds of them over the years, you start with that scope, cost, and schedule for your improvement project. And then you look at your existing corporate metrics or KPIs, key performance indicators, that you're already regularly measuring, and align your proposed scope of work to that relevant measure. And there may be more than one. We want to look at what the proposed outcomes are from your maintenance improvement project and identify how much of a lever they are on moving the overall corporate metrics in the right direction. You might want to use typical financial metrics for evaluating the business case. Things like ROI, return on investment, payback ratios, net present value, at whatever the hurdle rate is for your organization. Many companies have guidelines of payback in less than a year, or a certain ROI are considered no-brainers for proceeding. So it's really about understanding what your scope is, your cost, and your schedule, and then what your proposed benefits are.
Okay, and you mentioned some great terms there, return on investment. Can you explain what some of those are for our listeners who aren't familiar with those? Like hurdle rate, for example. Some may not understand what that is.
Sure. Your hurdle rate is usually the percent at which a project will proceed within your company. So the expected profit needs to exceed 10% or 20% or 30%. Your finance or accounting folks can give you this number. Typically, it's calculated at whatever the cost of capital. So if your company could invest that money into a bank account, how much would they get as a return off of that, plus whatever the profit margin is? So the actual formulas for ROI, payback ratio, net present value, you can find them in basic Excel. So it's a matter of plug and play on what the key targets are for profitability for your company when you're going into it. These are very straightforward. Your accountant does them every day and can certainly help you with this if it's something that you haven't done yourself at the front line.
So at this point, we've taken the time to define the scope, get everyone involved, build the business case. Now we have that business case. What do we actually do with it? Do we go to our line manager? Do we go further than that? How do we use this business case then?
Typically, depending on how big the project is, it can be either approved at the line manager level. Sometimes they get included in next year's budget cycle. I think that's one of the key things a lot of companies right now in the fourth quarter here are finalizing their budgets for next year. And if you've got a larger type project, you may want to get it as a separate line item into next year's budget. If it's a much smaller one, it's probably within the signing authority of your line manager to go ahead with it. I think one of the important things with building the business case is it tells your line manager or perhaps the maintenance manager that you've actually thought about what the purpose of this project is. So what's the scope, who needs to be involved, and what the cost is. Both in terms of people's time and actual dollars, and when you think you're going to finish this project. I find that a lot of companies, as I said, have guidelines of payback. So if it's in less than a certain number of months or less than a year, it's fairly easy to get those approved because the benefits are seen quite quickly. I think that one of the things that we may want to start off with and consider from a credibility point of view is if we start with smaller maintenance improvement projects and demonstrate that you really do achieve those projected results, you build credibility with the management moving up in your company.
So one of the things we may want to do is start small, do a small project that maybe our line manager, generate those returns, demonstrate our understanding of how to properly manage that project, how to embed that change, and be able to successfully calculate true return on investments or, you know, net present value or whatever the case may be.
Absolutely. I often find using these small projects really does demonstrate it. Common technique is to also run it as a pilot project at one site or one small production line. And as the results are proved out, you can roll it to other production lines or trains or to other sites for the overall company benefit. One of the things that I've also very commonly dealt with is you're not currently measuring the baseline as is. So it's hard to demonstrate progress where you don't know where you're starting from. So sometimes you actually need to make one of the first steps in your project implementation plan to start measuring to show the results as it progresses. You know, one of the things that often scares off our senior execs when they look at these and they've got these huge ROIs, but they have a big investment up front, in their minds, most of the senior execs double the cost, double the length of time, and half the expected value. And if they do that and the ROI and payback are still favorable, chances are you're going to get given a chance to approve it to proceed, at least as a pilot project.
Yeah, that's an interesting point because I've often seen and heard individuals create a business case for improvement for maintenance. And within that is a huge ROI. It's massive. It's like, oh, this pays back in 3 months, all these other things. And then the senior execs look at it and be like, just ignore it or bypass it. So is there any other ways we can overcome that?
I think that being realistic and not overly optimistic. There's always sort of this pessimistic, likely, and optimistic outcome. Sometimes if we can include a scenario that says, you know, a range of where the expected value comes in, or as I said, trying it out on a pilot project or a small scale and saying, you know what, if I put this in on this one train, this is the value I expect to receive, or I'm going to implement this on one, if I've got multiple pieces of equipment in parallel, maybe I'm going to change out the maintenance program on one of them and start to demonstrate the value of it. And once that result starts to come in, then I extrapolate it forward. It's better to underpromise and overdeliver on the results coming out. But I often in my head say, what if the cost is double? What if it takes twice as long? What if I get half of the expected value coming out? Is this still favorable to proceed? Because I'm competing against other projects for those scarce dollars and people's time.
Double the cost, double the time, half the return. Will it still fly? I haven't seen that approach, but I definitely do like it.
it kind of gives you a sense of what if your optimism's off. As much as we would all like to pretend that every project is going to succeed beyond our wildest imagination, we need to bring some realism into this.
Yep, I think that's definitely a good way to do that. Now, if we do that, and maybe it doesn't look like it's going to pass that hurdle rate when we do it that way, but it's close, is it still worth putting forward then?
I would put it forward, but I would also start to look at, have you really captured where all the benefits are? Sometimes some of the benefits are quite tangible, such as increased production capacity or reduced costs on maintenance and repair, those sorts of things. But there's often a lot of extra benefits that are harder to quantify, and they're not really intangible, but they feel like it. Some of it could be around improved safety, improved reliability of that equipment to deliver the product out the back end of your plant, all of those sorts of things. And while it can be difficult to prove the improved safety or decreased risk in terms of a process safety incident, things like that, those are very valid reasons for proceeding with a project that may appear to be borderline from an economics point of view. Generally, though, as I said, I would start small or start on a pilot and prove out the results. And you might be amazed at how quickly you can actually generate real, tangible, and measurable results.
Yeah, pilots definitely are a good way to start. Start small, demonstrate it, then they'll give you additional funds. So if we step back to some of those intangible or soft savings or soft benefits, when you record those on a business case, do you just have a separate area where here are some of the soft benefits and you might highlight improved safety based on previous experience this way? How do you actually communicate that in the business case?
Depending on the size of your company, you may actually find that you have an internal template that you're supposed to fill out for building your business case. And sometimes there's a category called additional benefits or intangible benefits or things like that. If we think about it, many maintenance improvement projects really are related to equipment reliability, and a more reliable plant is a safer plant. Most people get hurt when they rush out to deal with equipment that is in a failed state or shutting down or things like that. So if we can demonstrate that the equipment is going to be more reliable, or we're going to extend the intervals in between maintenance services or things like that, not only is there the financial benefit associated with increased availability and uptime on that equipment, but the reliability factor of not having it trip, particularly if we're dealing with repeat failures, there's a huge safety factor there. Difficult to quantify, but the fewer people who are exposed to equipment in a failed state, the better. So we need to think about that. As I said, most business case templates, and every company I've ever worked at, no matter how small, has had some form of template to fill out. They do have a section for additional considerations.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you are doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com.
Okay. Now, when we're looking at projects that, you know, might not have a direct return on investment, but they're enablers to driving improved processes, systems, analysis, whatever the case is, how do you quantify those, or how do you push some of those forward when you can't really have a true ROI? When I'm thinking of this, I'm thinking, you know, fixing your asset hierarchy, capturing failure data, you know, fixing your spare parts data so you can actually understand duplicates, true spend, those sorts of things. They're all enablers to being able to do these other things, but in itself, you can't really justify or demonstrate a return on investment. How do you approach some of those?
Oh, wow. That's a huge challenge. And I won't pretend there's any silver bullet for that one. I think a lot of times what we end up having to do with it is to discuss those activities, whether it's your asset criticality, your asset hierarchy, as an enabler. And then we need to look at what is the business driver behind what you will be using the data for afterwards. So I think that one of the things we need to keep in mind is those organizational goals. Around safety, production throughput, OPEX, CAPEX, growth, and look at whatever that data that you're planning to use is going to be used as an input to, and start looking at the actual financial or safety benefit of those future projects.
Okay. You have to have that upfront conversation. This is the enabler for these projects, which will generate this ROI type. And you have to approach it that way.
Absolutely. And I also think this is where that having demonstrated value and repeat value on smaller initiatives can help give the senior management confidence that when you're proposing something forward, that it actually will be a benefit to the organization as a whole. Very difficult to walk in front of a VP and start from scratch on, I need to redo an asset hierarchy, or I need to spend a lot of time on asset criticality. Way easier if you've built up credibility on smaller projects going forward and then say, you know what, we'd like to take on this. We'd really like to look at our spare parts inventory. We believe that there's a good financial business case associated with whether it's reducing the inventory, optimizing the inventory levels. But in order to do that, we actually need to know what spare parts we need, what pieces of equipment they're attached to, and what the asset and maintenance strategy is for those. Am I going to be repairing them on site or sending them off site? And so once you can link up all the steps in that, it's, and you've got credibility built up on your previous project, it's much easier to go to your VP and say, please have faith in me and that this will be an enabler moving forward.
Now, we've covered quite a bit on building a business case. Is there anything we missed on this particular topic that, you know, we need to get in there?
I think we're pretty good. We've covered quite a wide range here.
Okay, good. Now, do you have any tips or words of wisdom for people that are trying to build this business case, or, you know, maybe they've done it once or twice, but they haven't had success? Any quick tips or words of wisdom?
I think for me, one of the big things is to keep in mind what my organizational goals are. Typically, we've got goals around safety, production throughput, operating expenses, capital expenses, and growth. And I think regardless of whether you're in a for-profit or a not-for-profit organization, your shareholders or the taxpaying public want to know that their dollars are being spent wisely to drive value from the assets. So at this frontline level, maintenance improvement projects are a key component of achieving one or more of these objectives.
Yes, absolutely. Demonstrate the value. Show us what you're acting responsibly with, whether it's the shareholder dollars or the municipal dollars or whichever the case is. Show us you're being responsible. Good. Now, what is the one thing you see done incorrectly with business cases?
I think people often assume that just because it's a great technical idea that it also makes financial sense to proceed. And it's important. One of the things about a business case is it forces you to look objectively at whether the proposal will actually bring value to the organization. And that value is typically measured in dollars. So it's about speaking the language of the boardroom.
Okay, so learn finance, make friends with your local finance person, get them understanding what you're doing, and maybe they'll be able to help you build that business case as well.
For sure.
Now, what is the one action you would like our listeners to take away from today regarding business cases for maintenance improvement?
I think one of the big things, we've been chatting about all these different topics, but building a business case doesn't need to be a monstrous exercise. It's really a matter of understanding the scope, the schedule, and the cost. And very simple ratios such as ROI, payback, and NPV can be used. And then connecting them back to the organizational goals and objectives.
Okay. Very good. Well, Susan, as always, you've highlighted some great things around building business case for maintenance improvements. Now, where can people find out more about you? What activities or events are you involved with? Do you have any resources you can share on this specific topic or any other resources that you want to share?
For myself, I'm on LinkedIn and I can be contacted through PMAC as well. PMAC just held a very successful MainTrain conference in Saskatoon, so I encourage people to listen to PMAC's monthly webinar series or join your local chapter events. For myself, I'm also teaching the Maintenance Management Professional MMP certification program, so we'll connect with a number of your listeners through class. In terms of resources, I think the takeaway from here is don't overlook the valuable resources that are available within your own company. There's no need to build this business case alone, so reach out to your technical services or engineering department or individual finance, accounting, supply management, as well as some of your key vendors for support as you build this business case. You'll be amazed at how quickly it can be pulled together once you know the actual scope of work that you're trying to accomplish.
No, that's great advice. I remember once upon a time, I had to build a business case, so I went and did it. I built this template, this model, all in Excel, spent all this time researching how this stuff works, getting it all in place. Go to present, and they're like, well, here's the template from finance, populate this one. It's like, I really should have asked first.
Yeah, and it's not a monstrous activity. It can actually be quite simple to pull together.
Exactly. So make sure you ask internally for those resources. Well, once again, thanks, Susan. I truly appreciate you taking the time to share your vast knowledge with our listeners, and I'm looking forward to our next conversation.
Sounds great. Thanks very much for inviting me to join your show, James.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.